In the vast, steep garden of Belgardia, great gusts of wind lashed the plants. The woman instinctively raised an elbow to her face, rounding her back. Then, almost immediately, she straightened up again. She had arrived before dawn and watched as the light came up, but the sun remained hidden. She had unloaded the big sacks from the car, 175 feet of maximum thickness plastic rolled up in a tube, cylinders of electrical tape, 10 boxes of ring shank nails to attach to the ground, and a hammer with a lady's handle. At Conan, the enormous hardware store, a shop assistant had asked if she would mind showing him her hands. He just wanted to measure her grip, he said, but she had found herself frozen, unable to respond. She hurried toward the phone booth now. It looked fragile, as if it were made of candy canes and crumbling meringue. The wind was raging already. She didn't have much time. They worked nonstop on the hill above Otsuchi for 2 hours. She, wrapping the phone booth, the bench, the entrance sign, and the little archway at the beginning of the path in tarpaulin, and the wind, which didn't let up for a moment. Every so often, she would hug herself involuntarily, the way she had done for years whenever she felt her emotions rising up. But then she would get back on her feet, lengthen her spine, and face the bank of clouds that now enshrouded the entire hill. Only once she had finished, once she could taste the sea in her mouth, as if the world had been turned on its head, did she stop. Exhausted, she sat down on the bench, which she'd wrapped up like a silkworm in its cocoon, feeling the weight of her boots, their soles packed with earth. If the world were to fall now, she told herself, she would fall with it. But if there was even the slightest chance of it staying upright, she would use every last ounce of energy she had to make that happen. The city below was still asleep. There was the odd window lit by the glow of a lamp, but most people had left their roller shutters down and secured their rain screens with wooden rods in preparation for the approaching typhoon. Some had leaned sandbags against doors to prevent them from being ripped off their hinges by the fury of the wind and to stop the rain from flooding the rooms inside. Yet Yui seemed oblivious to the rain and the dense blackness of the sky. She observed her work, the plastic and tape dressings she had used to protect the phone booth, the wooden bench, the pathway of slabs in single file, the archway, and the signpost that read, "The Wind Phone." Everything was caked in mud and thoroughly waterlogged. If the typhoon threatened any sort of damage, she would be there, ready to hold it all in place. Yui was untouched by the most basic truth, that fragility does not reside in things so much as in flesh. An object can be repaired or replaced, but the body cannot. Perhaps it is stronger than the soul, which once broken can remain so forever. But it is weaker than wood, lead, or iron. Her refusal to acknowledge this meant that she didn't, for a single moment, perceive the danger she was in. "It's September already," she sighed, contemplating the darkness of the sky that was approaching from the east. Nagatsuki, the month of long nights, as it used to be called. Yet she had repeated that same phrase every month. "It's October already, November, December. It's April already," she had said. And then it was May, and so on. In the never-ending list of days that began on March 11th, 2011. Every week had been a struggle. Every month simply hours stacked up in the attic for a future that might never arrive. Yui had long dark hair that was blonde at the tips, as if it were growing from the bottom up. She had stopped dyeing it when her mother and daughter were swallowed by the sea. Instead, she got it cut a little shorter each time until eventually it looked like this, a fallen halo. The color of her hair, the contrast between the yellow and its natural black, had ended up being a sort of log of her grief, like an advent calendar. If she was still alive, she owed it all to that garden, to the white telephone booth with the sky blue roof and the black telephone sitting by the notebook on the ledge. Her fingers would dial a number at random, her hand would lift the receiver to her ear, and her words would tumble into it. Sometimes she cried. Sometimes she laughed. Because life could still be funny, even after a tragedy.